Blog Talk Radio.
That were lost by our military off the
shores of Pensacola, Florida, Thursday night. Seven Marines and four GIs went down in a helicopter. So this program is brought to them, is brought in special tribute to them. So, well, let's see. Last night, Cornflakes got really banned.
He got knocked out. I mean, yeah, I didn't see the fight because it wasn't televised, but yeah, Cornflake got knocked out. But, I mean, you got to give Al Haymon credit, man, with these cards he's putting on.
Yeah.
And, you know, last night we were really treated to a very entertaining show. Again, much kudos to Al Haymon and the PBC boxing staff. They're really doing a heck of a job with getting some good quality matchups on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
Free TV, that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're following it up with CBS in a couple weeks. I'm gonna let you guys talk here for a minute. I have a surprise guest. I think I'm gonna be able to get on, so I'm going to go off here and get him.
Zito, you know, I think it was a great night of action last night. You know what I think? You know, it's funny because you know, kind of, I want to use the analogy like you know you use for football and basketball, where you say. Offense gets the glory, but defense wins the championships. It's similar to that in boxing where the A side gets the glory and the recognition, but it's the B side who kind of has a responsibility of bringing the fight. And, you know, all three B sides on a televised portion of the card brought the fight to the A sides. And subsequently to me, although we got the results that we all expected to get, I don't think any of the A side performers looked great personally, Zito.
Yeah, and to be honest, none of the fights went the distance. None of the fights
last
night went the distance. Oh, well, it was an eight-round fight. I forgot about that. But even that fight, it was like both guys, they were tough. They gave and took all fight long. And you have to give credit to Andre Berto and his team. They took care of Jose Zito Lopez. I thought it was an early stoppage, but... he generally had Jose Zito in a hurt position. Now, with Sean Porter fight, Sean Porter's not known for power punching. He's known to be strong. He's pretty quick.
Yeah.
At times, he's pretty basic with his attack. He'll 1-2 a lot. But what you saw last night, he did good body work, which actually slowed his opponent down, who was very, very game. I mean,
who also
one
did
word
good body work himself as well.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. He did very, very good counterpunching, hard counterpunching, which actually stopped Sean Porter in his tracks a few times. But as strong as Sean Porter was, and Sean Porter has very good cardio. So he kept that pace up and just kept getting on the inside of the guy, ripping him with body shots, and just basically wore the guy down until he caught the guy with a good shot, and that led to that stoppage. So, I mean... It was very entertaining. Every as you said, the B-side fighters, they put on very good performances. They all showed up to fight. Now, they all lost, but in the end, they didn't lose anything as far as credibility. And, being on the Al Haymon card and performing like that, these guys, to me, solidified future earnings in big fights.
Yeah, you know, all three guys went out on their shield. They really did. Yeah, regardless of what you may think of their potential. For Jose Zito Lopez, it's a little different. He's a little longer in the tooth. The Harper, who was fighting Areola, and the other and Eric Bonet, who was fighting Porter. They're younger, so it definitely elevates their stock. I think with Jose Zito Lopez, he's getting towards the end of the road, so to speak, as being a viable challenge. Two rising guys. He's definitely a gatekeeper, journeyman type status guy. But again, he's at the point now. And you know what? And Zito, you kind of pointed this out to me before the fight. Jose Zito's never really been able to, outside of the Victor Ortiz fight, show that he can really take the power of a quality, you know, welterweight or heavier. And, that was his undoing yesterday. He was, to me, outboxing Andre Berto for the first three rounds. But Berto's power proved to be the difference.
Berto's power and toughness. Berto's a tough guy. I mean, he walked through quite a bit of what Jose Zito was doing.
Yeah.
One thing about Jose Zito, he's built off of the Victor Ortiz fight.
Yeah.
And really, if you at his resume after that, he's put on very good performances, but he hasn't exactly won
no.
You know what I mean? Or stood up to that point.
And you know, Jose Zito's a guy who he was outboxing Andre Berto to a certain extent by using his feet and his range, but he backs himself in the corners, which is not good when, you know, when you're facing a bigger power puncher. And I always felt that Jose Zito was always more suited for the weight that he was at before the Victor Ortiz fight, which was 140.
Yeah.
I always thought the welterweights were a little big for him, and his durability is not necessarily suited for welterweight, personally.
Yeah, and I think his toughness is to be quite, well, not durability, also toughness.
Yeah, he's tough.
He's tough. He's tough, and he'll stay in the pocket. He'll go out on his shield.
He's tough, but he's just not. I don't know if he's physically big enough to handle those shots from those bigger guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, you get like a Marcos Madonna, Andre Berto. Well,
Canelo
it was ludicrous for him. Ludicrous for him to even go up to fight Canelo.
Yes,
that didn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah,
but I mean, for the money, you're going to do it. But I mean, logically, that's heavy.
Yeah.
But, so I mean, those guys aren't the lightest hitting guys. These guys, they have power. Madonna, he has stone hands, the wear you down hands, to where Berto and Canelo, they have that TNT. So I mean, he's not fighting, you know, light hitting guys.
You know, I also think he'd, yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we're waiting for Peter is supposed to call us back.
Chocolate.
Yes. So. But we still are going to have Dan Birmingham at 6:30.
Mm.
Sure.
You know, tonight we have the Legend Slayer and Sergey Kovalev, you know, traveling to the Lions Den itself to face Jean Pascal.
Right.
That's a contrast in styles. That if you can say that. Now they both. You're not going to see a lot, well, maybe on Pascal and later on the fight when he begins to tire, but you're not going to see much inside fighting.
Yeah.
Neither guy really goes shoulder to shoulder with you or they rub skin or anything. These guys, they're going to get their space and throw that other.
Yeah, I completely concur. You know, on the undercard of that, we also have a good friend of the show, Stevie USS Cunningham, going against Zara Glaskov.
So what do you think of that one? Stevie's been out for a while and had some. He hasn't really done anything this year. Do you think he looked ready?
We saw Stevie's last fight, right, Zito?
Yeah.
Right, and you know, for once, Stevie is not fighting a giant, towering, 250-pound of muscle heavyweight. He's fighting a guy who's a little bit closer in his size. Zara Glaskov is bigger. But he's not going to have the significant size advantage that Stevie has been dealing with, you know, over these past couple of years, you know, with the Tyson Furies and the Fatus of the world, the gentleman he fought last time. So, you know, with that being said, you know, Stevie has a very good chance to win this eliminator. Zita?
Stevie's a class fighter.
He's a class fighter.
And the only thing that Stevie really could decide to is power. But you have to get to him. And you have to be good enough to get to him.
You know, I said it before that I feel Stevie is the best pure boxer in the heavyweight division. Just pure, fundamental boxer. He's the best pure boxer in the heavyweight division, in my opinion. He's just a small guy with these giants today.
And that's the only thing. Stevie, I mean, weight-wise, he's not the biggest guy. But he gets his respect in the ring. I mean, Amir Mansour said he definitely got his respect in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, Stevie's not void of punching power. The last fight we see, he definitely got the guy kept coming. We got, what was his name? Nada? Not Nada.
Natu. His last name was Fatu.
Natu.
Natu, you're right.
Yeah, Natu. Yeah, Natu, where he kept coming. He was taking a beating, and he eventually had to stop it. But he was taking a beating, kept coming. But Stevie was able to move his feet, steer him, and basically anything he wanted. One thing about Stevie, for a light guy and facing these giants, he goes to the body very well.
Yeah, yes, he does.
He's not scared to go to the body
you know, when we're watching Stevie fight these big guys, I think a lot of times, you know, we become a little biased. We're screaming, Stevie, get away, because you'll see Stevie dominating the fight, but then, you know, he, as the fight wears on and he starts to slow down a little bit and he becomes more stationary, that's when the fight becomes more even, you know, because the guy's size advantage tends to play a part. But with Stevie's good at, Stevie didn't have one punch power at cruiserweight, so obviously he's not going to have it at heavyweight. But he's so good, he will run you into punches that kind of magnify the force because you're moving into it. He's countering you, and he's catching you with shots you don't see. And overall, he's capable of beating you up, even if he's not necessarily capable of knocking the big guy out. What happens, though, like for instance with the Tyson Fury, Tyson started putting his weight on Stevie, and it made it a little tougher. But Stevie was clearly winning a boxing match. So we all know that Stevie beat Thomas the Demick before Czar Glasskov beat him. They just didn't give Stevie the decision. So it'll be very interesting to see how he performs tonight, along with Jean Pascal against Kovalev. Like you said, Zito, Kovalev, neither guy's an inside fighter. Not because neither guy can't do it, but it's just because, you know, it doesn't necessarily come to play in their game. Sergey tends to keep range, and you know, his power is at the end of his punches, and for the most part, people want to keep him away from him. Nobody is rushing inside to fight Sergey Kovalev, so he's never had to fight inside because no one's been able to navigate that distance without feeling his power. As far as Jean Pascal is a very sporadic fighter in the ring. He fights in bursts. He's an ambush kind of fighter. He is going to be the most physically formidable challenge that Kovalev could face right now. I said this to Zito the other night, Butch, that Bernard Hopkins is the best fighter, best boxer that Kovalev will ever face, but he has a more formidable physical challenge tonight because of the speed and explosiveness and the power, as well as the insane toughness and durability of Pascal. The problem is Pascal at times is a technical malady, and that's going to be tough to overcome with the size and consistency that Sergey has.
It would be easier to kind of lean toward Pascal if he was more defensively adept. With his offense, he tends to put himself in powerful positions. He has
consists more of using his legs to move out of range.
Yeah.
But Kovalev will cut the ring off on you, though.
and that's going to be interesting to see. Can Kovalev cut the ring off? What's Pascal going to do? Is he going to try to grab? I mean, is he going to try to fight on the inside, try to get inside of the long punches of Kovalev? It's hard to tell just because you know what Kovalev's going to do. You basically know what Pascal's going to do, but you don't know how that chemical mix is going to, transpire, what's going to happen.
And you know, the funny thing is I think Pascal, and I've always thought this, he's kind of like the true wild card of that division, and he's a wild card in the ring because you just don't know what you're going to get, not from fight to fight with Pascal, but from moment to moment. Bernard saw him fight, Chad Dawson, and he saw that Chad had problems with Pascal's speed. Chad had never faced anybody who was quicker than him of foot and of hand. But Bernard also saw that Pascal's capable of being a technical malady, and he realized he could take advantage of that. What we saw in Kovalev's more cerebral approach to Bernard Hopkins is you saw that Kovalev is also able to take advantage of technical flaws. Not that Bernard offered him any, but with Bernard's degenerated speed and power, at his age, Kovalev was able to take advantage of things that would not have been there necessarily if Bernard was a hair quicker. Pascal's significantly quicker, but those openings are there because of how he fights. So it's going to be a very interesting fight. I think he can trouble Kovalev severely throughout the fight, but to see him do it over 12 rounds, knowing that he has a tendency to fade as the fight goes on, stamina-wise, it's hard to see him being able to do so.
And Pascal, well, you see the fight. It was eerily, with Bernard Hopkins and Kovalev, it was eerily similar, although yet more, a lot more brutal. It was eerily similar to the Chad Dawson Bernard Hopkins fight, the second one.
Yeah.
And it was just that range, not necessarily the speed was giving Bernard problems with Chad Dawson, but the range of the punches and certain the angles, where punches were going, where they were hitting. And one thing is Bernard, he likes fighting on his own terms, as does Pascal. I mean, that's just and that's how Bernard beat Pascal. He said, I'm not going to fight on your terms.
Yeah.
He said, you know, your terms, when you fight on your terms, that's going to be your disadvantage. Yeah. Simple as that. So you can't do that against Kovalev. We're going to see. If Pascal could dance, if he's allowed to dance around the ring, and if his feet could get him out of trouble to where he could fight on his own terms, Kovalev's going to have trouble for a while. Just because I think Pascal could take that one shot.
Yeah.
Now, if he's going to get away from the two and the three, he's going to be all right. I think he's going to be all right just because he's going to land his shot. He comes in
strong. And you know what? And Pascal is capable of hurting Kovalev. Pascal is a very solid puncher. And
although not technical, he hits hard.
No. Yeah, he hits hard, and he gets the punches there very quickly. So, I mean, he's definitely capable of hurting Kovalev. Kovalev, technically significantly better than Pascal, but it doesn't mean he doesn't have his flaws and weaknesses as well. Kovalev has a tendency to square his feet up. His feet are not always in punching position, which is why sometimes he gets caught off balance. He got knocked down against Blake Caballero, actually after a low blow, but his feet were together and he was squared up, so he just kind of tipped over, although he wasn't, you know, even stunned. So there are things that Pascal can take advantage of. Is he technically astute to take advantage of them? I don't necessarily see that, but he does have the speed, explosion, athleticism to go ahead and take advantage of things that may present themselves.
And Pascal's faced, to be honest, a better technical fighter in Chad Dawson and beat him than Kovalev. Kovalev, he's a monster puncher, and he's not bad at all technically. But Chad Dawson is better. Is better technically. And at
Pascal,
that time,
Chad Dawson was considered
a lot better than he is now. He was considered
undefeated. That's when he was undefeated.
Exactly.
And you know, Pascal has faced a murderer's row. He's faced significantly over the course of his career better competition than Kovalev has to this point. Kovalev's best win is Hopkins, which Pascal has on his resume twice. Pascal also has Chad Dawson. He has Andrian Diaknow, the former light heavyweight champion. He also has, of course, Carl Froch. He has some major names on his ledger, and he's always accounted himself and always been in each one of those fights. He's never been dominated. He's never been stopped. Although I saw a glove touch the canvas with Bernard Hopkins, it wasn't ruled a knockdown, which means to this point Pascal's never even been off his feet as a pro. So, make no mistake, Kovalev has a very stiff test in front of him.
Absolutely. And both guys will get hit with punches. Don't get that mistaken. Neither guy, as I say, is really defensively adept.
But, you know, I also do think that the range and the boxing acumen. See, that, you know what? You know, we look at the GGG and Sergey Kovalev. It's not just their power, but it's also their boxing acumen. They're smart fighters in there. They're cerebral fighters. And they know how to break a man down. And so that's what Pascal is dealing with today. He's not just dealing with a big puncher, but he's dealing with a smart, methodical pressure fighter, you know, not a balls-to-the-walls pressure fighter, you know, a la Brandon Rios, but a methodical pressure fighter, a guy who just kind of gradually turns it up on you and keeps touched on you. But the difference between Gennady Golovkin and Kovalev as far as punching power, they both hit like mules, but Gennady will vary his punches a little bit more. He'll throw some touches in there.
Yeah.
Kovalev throws everything basically with dirty intentions. Kovalev is a killer in the ring, and he throws every single punch hard. And it's going to be a hell of a fight. I cannot see this not being a good fight.
it's the matchup, the styles. I mean, it's like neither guy is going to do what the other guy is going to do.
Yeah.
Now, you know Kovalev is going to basically take the center of the ring. He's going to be allowed to because Pascal, he doesn't operate there like that. I can see Pascal giving them trouble early.
Yeah.
That happens. But can Kovalev get Pascal's timing? Then that herky-jerky style, it's hard to get that timing. Chad Dawson didn't get the timing. I mean, that there could just – it could baffle them all night long. Mm-hmm. But if he does get the timing, then we're going to see something interesting.
Yeah.
Paul Frotch and Pascal.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And the funny thing is that was really truly a much even more raw version of Pascal than what we see today. But that's a very good point, because Carl Froch, even though, you know, he's looked at as, you know, being fundamentally flawed, he's very skillful in the ring. He knows how to use his range. He knows how to step in. He just knows when to do certain things. And what he was able to do was, you know, against Pascal, was make it a dogfight. Part of the reason is because you hit Pascal, he typically wants to hit you back. And they warred, and Pascal took some tremendous shots, and he landed some tremendous shots. And both guys' stock was elevated from that fight. I don't think he can do that with Kovalev. Kovalev is bigger and stronger than Carl Froch. You know, Kovalev,
yeah.
Again, Bernard said he felt like he was a middleweight fighting against a cruiserweight. Kovalev has that type of size once he rehydrates. So for Pascal, it would behoove him, in spite of his chin, in spite of his toughness and his heart, it would behoove him to use his legs. It would be interesting to see if his style frustrates Kovalev. At the same time, we know Pascal in the past has been easily frustratable. It's been easy to get into his head, so it would be interesting to see what happens. I do believe Roy Jones Jr. is cornering Pascal, if I'm correct, Cito?
Okay.
Yes, he is, because Bernard Hopkins is going to be doing commentating in Roy's stead, because Roy will be working in the corner of Pascal. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of game plan Roy Jones has put together for him. Obviously, I think with Roy in his corner, it's definitely going to be one where he's moving his legs.
Well, with Roy out of his corner, he's going to be moving his legs. I mean, that's Pascal's way. It's interesting, but I don't know about that choice. Just because, has Roy really trained before?
Well, I mean, he's been working with Roy for a few fights now, so it's not so much of a choice. That's who his trainer is. Yeah, he's been working. He's been with Roy for a few fights.
Hey guys, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have one of the best trainers in the world right with us tonight, and we saw how well he's done with his fighter last weekend on TV. Let's welcome Mr. Dan Birmingham. Dan, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for the kind words.
Hey, Dan, congratulations for last week's big win, man.
Thank you. Appreciate that, too.
Absolutely, Dan. How you doing?
Great. How about you guys?
Great.
Doing fine. I want to be the first to say, I picked against Keith. I thought Guerrero would be just technically a little better, and I was absolutely wrong. So I want to definitely congratulate you guys, and I was very impressed.
Thank you. Well, when we started this camp, Keith looked me dead in the eyes and goes, Dan, I want you to train me to knock this guy out.
Wow.
And I said, well, you know, he's not going to go with just one shot. I said, you know, so we worked on what I call a series of power punch combinations, where he goes behind a good jab and lands three or four shots, takes a step back in, three or four shots, you know, step back like that. So that's how he scored the knockdown.
And you really, if you know, 10 more seconds in that round, you'd have had him out of there. It looked like the ref, we were joking that it looked like the ref was pump faking, because he kept wanting to jump in there. He's like, not yet. It looked like he was about to jump in there, the bell rung. So what were you most impressed with Keith's performance that particular night? Out of everything you had, you know, strategized, what did he really do that you really thought was exemplary?
Well, we lay out a plan for every fight, of course, but when you fight a crafty southpaw like Guerrero, we watched a Mayweather tape, and we saw what he did. He used some movement, not as much as Keith, but he got in position where he would stay to the right and make Guerrero reach, you know, with his power left hand almost constantly. But he would find that alley where he could pot shot and get some punches home. And we worked on that for a couple of months before this fight, and it worked well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the lead right. I was impressed. Keith was able to land the lead right when the fight went on with a bit of regularity. Power.
We worked on that lead right a lot. We worked on what we call our approach to our opponent, where we're coming forth and we're stutter-stepping, we're giving movement, we're feinting, we're juking. And we started feinting the right hand more. A lot of guys, when they box, they want to feint the jab a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I said for this fight, let's work on the right hand feint more. So he was doubling and tripling the right hand sometimes, you know, and he'd feint the right hand a lot. And as he'd come forward, he would keep his balance as Guerrero would move back. So he would be able to fire it at any time he could.
Now, was there anything in particular that Keith did that you weren't quite satisfied with, things that you looked at and said, you know what, we could work on that a little bit more?
I mean, it was such a brilliant performance. I hate to inject any negativity. And, you know, he listened to instructions. When I was yelling at him, you know, during the fight, you know, throw the right hand straight or loop the right hand, you know, he was following instructions to the T. So, you know, if there's anything negative, it would probably be on my part because he followed instructions like he's supposed to.
Outstanding. Was there anything outside of Guerrero's innate, insane toughness, was there anything that he did that surprised you guys? Were we prepared for everything, even all his little roughhousing tactics that he's known for?
Well, we brought in a sparring partner named Leonardo Tyner, and he's...
Yeah,
Leonardo. Yeah, he's good for holding and tying up and wrestling with you a little bit, hitting with the free hand. So, you know, we instructed him to do that. So Keith got used to that. But, you know, Kenny Bayless, the referee, did a magnificent job. I talked to him before the fight, and I asked him a question. I said, Kenny, what do you deem excessive holding? You know, and he went through the whole thing. We're grabbing with one arm. He calls, you know, a light clinch. And if you got both hands around, you're in a heavy clinch. He said, and in a light clinch, I like fighters to punch with their free hand and try to get free on their own. But he didn't give Guerrero much time to really hold on. He would break right away, which I think helped the fight move along for the fans too.
And I think a lot of it had to do with Keith's foot movement too. His foot movement and his power kind of settled Guerrero down as far as trying to get inside. Guerrero, I mean, he was brave in his attempts, but at times he was shy.
Oh, most definitely. You know, we work on controlling the distance because really the fighter that controls the distance, in other words, stays out of harm's way, just out of harm's way, and can step with a quick step and strike at about any time. I mean, that's usually the guy that wins the fight. So we worked on, you know, we worked on that distance stuff a lot.
You know, I think what makes Keith so formidable, and this is something I've said before, is, I mean, he's obviously capable of boxing, you know, technically has great, I mean, tremendous legs. He probably easily has the best legs in the division to me. I mean, he can move beautifully. But when you are chasing Keith, you're chasing a puncher. So what happens is it makes a pressure fighter a little less determined to put pressure on him because when you get in his face, you get hit hard. And so, you know, it was funny because after the fight, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, how come Guerrero didn't put pressure on Keith from the beginning? Well, because he couldn't, because he was hit hard. And what it does is it deters your entry. Does one fight Keith? This version of Keith Thurman right now, a guy who can move his legs like that, but if you get close to him, he hits you so hard you don't want to get close to him.
Well, I told him, you know, when I took over after Ben passed, I said, Keith, you need to become a better boxer. You need to work on your rhythm, your short step rhythm, you know, all the stuff that we work on, your feint and using your jab. I have a theory where, you know, you shouldn't go 5 seconds without at least using a jab. So, and then I also told him that a great boxer that can punch like you is going to be real tough to beat. So, you know, he's so creative and diverse. You know, he's working on new moves all the time specifically for a certain fight. And as time goes along, he's incorporating all these moves, you know, into his arsenal. So he's become a pretty unpredictable fighter, shall we say.
Now, that style of fighting has, you know, it takes a lot of stamina and conditioning.
Yes.
Do you have any worries about that later on in the fight?
No, not really. I mean, he's trained to go. He could go 15, 20 rounds. He could box all day. You know, when a fighter gets down, you know, to that last 3 weeks or so, he should already be prepared for 12 rounds. You know, and we're always adding more rounds just to make sure that we could be strong every second for the 12 rounds.
Well, that's one thing I noticed, and I guess I first noticed it with the Diego Chavez fight, was that Keith has the ability to retain his power late into the fight, even when he's moving a lot. So that was one thing that was very surprising with the Diego Chavez fight. Of course, he put Guerrero down late in the fight again.
Yes.
So he's always dangerous, it seems.
Well, sure, when he's working the bag or working the mitts, I mean, he's constantly using his power, which creates more stamina. I mean, it's not a theory. If you're trying to punch hard, it takes more wind, it takes more stamina. So in that sense, you know, he prepares himself to punch hard throughout the whole fight.
Now, Dan, are there any potential opponents that you see giving Keith any trouble?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm a very confident trainer. I really think he'd be the only guy to beat Mayweather. I really do. He's getting better with every fight. Of course, Floyd's getting older now, and he's going to take his $125 million and ride off, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
We'd really like to get Madonna in the ring next. That's who we'd really like to get this summer. I mean, Al asked me, you know, he laid out a plan for this year, and he gave me a list of several opponents. It was Mayweather, Madonna, and Porter, and some others. And I said, Madonna first. He said, well, he's not coming out to fight till this summer. So that's why we took Guerrero. So, and now that that's over with, you know, I'd like to focus on obtaining a Madonna fight. At Keith's last fight, Madonna looked at him and said, me and you, we fight, Keith. So, you know, I think we'll take the fight. Besides that, it'll be a good money fight for both of them.
What would be the strategy for Marcos Madonna going into that camp? What would you be trying to prepare Keith for? Obviously, we know Madonna's style, but from your perspective, having the thoroughbred you have, how do you prepare him for Madonna?
Well, I think again we control the distance and we wait on him. We get set fast and we wait on him because he's a come-forward fighter. He did it with Mayweather. He came forward, jumped in, and he fights long. So, you know, I think we try to initiate the action because Keith has developed a good jab. You know, we use our straight punches early on, and we just, you know, we wait for him. And once he comes in range, I mean, then we go to work. And being careful, too, because Madonna's a pretty good puncher.
I think it's a bad style matchup, just for the simple fact, even though Devin Alexander's a southpaw, he clearly outboxed Madonna. Keith is a better boxer from the outside than Devin Alexander and hits much harder. I don't know if Madonna survives that fight, as tough as he is.
Well, I don't think Madonna will survive either, and that'll be another legitimate argument to fight Floyd. I mean, we beat Guerrero better than Floyd did. And now when Keith knocks out Madonna, I mean, we say, hey, what's up? You know, you couldn't beat him. You couldn't beat Madonna. You couldn't stop him. So, I mean, that is what I know that Keith would want, to go out there and really take it to him and stop him and make a bigger statement. And even if Floyd doesn't fight us, you know, he's made those statements that he is the heir apparent to Floyd's throne.
What about an American?
Amir Khan, I mean, it would probably be a good fight. You know, it would be a great fight for us because Amir Khan, I don't think he has the power to hang with Keith. You know, he's kind of quick-footed, kind of quick-handed, but I think Keith would just cut the ring off and take it to him.
Hmm.
But it's an interesting fight. It is an interesting fight.
Hey, Dan, the only hard punch I can recall during that fight that Keith got was the butt to the head. How was that hematoma afterwards? I noticed he didn't go to the press conference.
Yeah, I know he went to the hospital.
He went straight to the hospital. That's
right.
He went to the hospital, and they diagnosed it as a hematoma, but we thought the orbital bone might have been fractured.
Oh.
That's what the doctor was saying in the back room, and that's mainly why they sent him. But, you know, he was at the hospital there for 3-4 hours, and they did a thorough CAT scan and everything, so...
There was no concussion from the headbutt?
No, not at all. Okay. Matter of fact, he had a headache after the fight, but it went away by morning. And but he really looked worse the next day because all the blood flowed down into the nasal area and around the eye. So he was all black and blue and swollen up. But other than that, he's fine. He's in great spirits. He went out. He was out at Berto's fight, and you know, he went out to California to look up this guy that has a specialty with hyperbaric chambers because it heals you real fast. Keith actually owns one and has one in his home.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he does a lot of innovative stuff, you know, with the acupuncture and Reiki and all this other stuff. Anything that a fighter could do, he has a doctor for his nutrition, you know. He does a lot of stuff that helps him.
Dan, what's going on with Edner?
Edner's going to fight, we hear, April 17th, although it's not been firmed up yet. You know, he signed with Al Haymon, and once he gets rolling around, I really think he'll be our next champ.
Nice.
Now, you just said he signed with Al Haymon. Will his fight be on one of Al Haymon's many televised cards? And even if it's...
No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Okay. So even if it doesn't make the televised portion, it still would probably show up on one of those cards at least, right?
Yes, yes, because he hasn't fought in over a year now.
Yeah.
He's anxious. He's anxious to
show
the world.
We got to see you guys live and up close when Edner fought in Philadelphia last time, and he had his tremendous second-round knockout. Definitely looking forward to seeing you guys back in action with Edner.
Cool. Yeah, he's. I think he's one of the strongest 130s in the world, although, you know, they couldn't secure fights at that weight, and he makes 130 easy. So we're going to see what's happening now with the 130-pound division with Edner.
Now, is there anybody you guys have set for an opponent so far, or is that still to be determined?
Yeah, it's to be determined. This will be sort of a comeback fight for Edner. I don't know if it'll be a big name, but, you know, you never know, so we'll see.
If not a big name, are you guys looking to get him in the mix towards the end of the year then, at least, probably?
Oh, yes. Oh,
or does
yes.
he need
I mean,
a few? So you don't think he needs any more tune-up or warm-up fights? You think he's basically ready to go?
Edner's the kind of guy that stays in the gym. He stays in the gym. He boxes, spars regularly. On Saturdays, I have a dozen to 15 different clubs that come all over Florida and, you know, box for 3-4 hours. So he's got a lot of good boxing. He's ready and eager to fight.
Hey, Dr. Chris just joined us, and he has a couple questions for you.
Okay. Hey, Doc.
How you doing, guys?
Hey,
Dr.
Chris.
Fight.
Hey, Dr. Chris.
How'd you like the fight last week?
Oh, I loved it.
With Keith.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking to Keith's trainer, so he loved it.
Yeah.
I called it. I said if Keith goes after him in the early rounds of the body, he's going to knock him out. Came damn close. I thought he had him about the 9th or 10th round. I thought he could have taken him out of there, but he was so far ahead, it wasn't even a fight. But, boy, I'll tell you what, that Guerrero's got a head. He ranks in there with Tex Cobb and LaMotta for a head. My own.
Oh, yeah.
That guy got a head like a rock.
Oh, yeah.
Took some ungodly body shots and head shots.
Well, he's never been down in his career, and Floyd couldn't put him down either.
I know.
You know, he's a very durable, tough guy.
It took Mayweather 5 years to get in the ring with Pacquiao. You're going to stay away from Keith for 5 years, too.
I think
he don't want any parts of Keith. I told Keith, you left hook to the body, you could beat Mayweather. And I think he could. I think he could beat Mayweather. That's the next.
Well, you gotta...
Dan, you're going to become a rich man someday. Remember me when I want to borrow money now. Remember my name.
Okay. Well, but I'm sure you
What's
made
going
it
on, guys?
Yeah.
We'll all borrow off of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Dan.
But I'll tell you what, that was a hell of a fight, man. That guy absorbed some brutal body punish.
Well,
man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
Dan, was that part of your game plan, Dan, to go to the body because Guerrero's known to have such a sturdy chin?
Oh, yes. Well, it's our plan to go to everybody's body because you can take it better on the chin than you can on them sweet spots in the body. So, you know, we just kept going to the body, on the chest, the arms, the inside of the arms, around the elbows, you know, wherever we could land.
You know, it was amazing, Dan. It was when they panned in on you in the corner, you were just actually trying to make sure everything was calm and calming down. When he went over to the other corner, it seemed like they were trying to rev him up to try and get anything out of him. But they had talked to Keith earlier, and he said he had had a chance to meditate and was dead. All he could do was think of the fight and do the fight the way he wanted to. And that just amazed me that, my question is, was that eight count delayed eight count? Because I thought he was down more than 8 seconds.
Yeah, that was a bit of a controversy in the forums.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
I thought he was on the floor more than eight count.
No, I didn't notice that. Well, when he came back to the corner, I told him to go out there and finish him, and he tried.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the calm thing, I think it's really important to keep a calm corner because your fighter really can't absorb what you're trying to get through to him if there's a lot of yelling and screaming and a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it seemed to be that you and he were in control of the fight from the first clang of the bell to the very last. And it's a credit to you for your training, but it's a credit to him to be the fighter that he is. He will be somebody that will help bring boxing back, I believe.
I think he'd make a great announcer someday, too.
Yeah, very, very articulate. Very, and charismatic, too. That's just articulate.
Yes, he is. Very creative and never lost for words.
And you know what? That's something I wanted to bring up, too. The fact that he really did have sort of like a coming out party on national TV. How do you think that will affect him going forward? Have things changed a little bit as of yet? Because this will definitely enhance his marketability.
Nothing's really changed. I mean, everybody was happy. I mean, Al was happy. NBC was happy because we kind of saved the show because the fights before were either one round blowouts or snooze fest. So,
or John Molina didn't throw punches for whatever reason.
Yeah, that was a real slow paced fight. So no, we were real happy. We got a lot of good feedback, and I'm sure in another month or so we'll be working on the future fight. So I'm anxious to see what happens there.
But Ben, you mentioned, if I'm correct, Sean Porter as a potential opponent. Did you happen to catch his fight last night?
No, I didn't. I actually slept through the whole show. But Berto.
Well, you were up late last week, so it can be understood.
No, Berto's a good friend of ours. We've known him since the early amateurs. He's been in my gym countless times, and now he wins the WBA interim belt, which was what Keith had. So he becomes number one for Keith's belt. It's kind of interesting.
Now you just said he's a good friend. Is that a fight you guys would take, or is that a fight you would look to try to avoid if you could? Just because of the closeness.
And the same thing with Sean. I mean, we're great friends. Kenny and I are great friends. We brought him here for 2 months a couple of years ago, and he helped us prepare for, I think, I'm trying to think of who it was, maybe the Zavik fight. It was back a little bit. But, we've gotten to be good friends, and here we're all surfacing back towards the top. But, we may have to face each other. I wish we could fight guys that we don't like,
Yeah.
But and also Guerrero, I wanted to say what a class act he was, because when he found out that Keith was going to the hospital, with his injury, the whole team was in the dressing room praying. And I heard that from a few people, that this whole team was on their knees praying for Keith, which I thought was
nice.
So Papa really Ruben was pretty well behaved through the whole promotion.
Oh yeah. I could see him getting in Mayweather's face, because Mayweather, he likes to talk a lot. He likes to make himself a spectacle. But Ruben and I, matter of fact, when we were in New York, we talked about, we both like building classic cars and having diesel trucks and stuff like that. So that's what we were talking about. We weren't even talking about fighting. And then, after the weigh-in, Ruben and I shook hands, and I said, hey, we'll be friends after. And he said, yeah, man, you guys are a class act. And I said, so are you guys. I said, the best man will win, and we'll shake hands after the fight. And that's how we approached it.
Outstanding.
Professional.
Well, I just could never see trying to make an enemy, over a boxing match.
Dan, you were talking about
Hey, Dan,
earlier.
When you said...
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Dan, when you said Keith went to the hospital, that wasn't after the fight, was it?
Yeah, it was for the hematoma, for the clash of heads at the end of the second round.
Oh, that's nothing, though.
Yeah, his head swelled up, but Carlos Vargas did an excellent job. He didn't do what most guys did, put an end swell on it and try to push it over, because that usually makes it worse. He just got the ice bag and he laid it on there every round, and he took the swelling down, you know, round by round. So by the
right.
time the eighth,
yeah, it came I, down, yeah.
Yeah, it came
but
down
hematoma,
a whole lot.
They could aspirate that out with a syringe, stick the whole thing out.
Oh. I see. Well, they may have done that at the hospital. I don't know.
Yeah, they could have done the hospital. They just aspirated right out. No problem at all. It's nothing but loose blood in there. Because if it clots in there, it takes a long time to go away. You know?
It sure looked bad, though. It looked like something that would really hurt.
Yeah, right. It swelled
right
up.
We were hoping that...
Yeah, but they don't hurt.
And I told him after the second round, I said, Keith, I don't know what's going to become of this hematoma, so make sure you win these two rounds.
Yeah.
They may stop it after four rounds. We don't know. You know, it goes.
Yeah, I was worried for a second.
Got to be ahead.
You know, by the third round, it looked like it was starting to get bigger. And you guys did an excellent job, because I thought it was going to look like Haseem Rockman for a minute.
I remember that one. That one was.
Yeah, I got a little worried. But then, you know, I noticed that it got to a certain point and it kind of stopped swelling. And I was like, man, excellent. You know what I mean?
Carlos Vargas, I think, is one of the best in the business.
Yeah.
We've worked together for about 10, 12 years. I met him through Joey Gilbert on the Contender. You know, Joey was on the Contender series.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Carlos after that. And we've been great friends. So any fighter that comes into the limelight, I have Carlos work with him. Fantastic guy.
Good.
And I think Keith's feet had a lot to do with limiting the contact to his head.
What's that? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Keith's feet, his ability to move and limit the contact, his ability to land the power shots from distance and subdue Guerrero and not, you know, having a whole lot of contact with Keith's head. I think his
You know, he has different escapes too. When he throws the right hand, sometimes he'll throw it quick and step back real quick. Sometimes he'll circle out and step at an angle. So he's given different looks even on his escapes. So it's pretty hard to counter him.
And, you know, it's hard to counter too when you're getting hit as hard as hell too. I mean, it's easier to counter a punch you can more easily absorb than a punch that Keith is hitting you with, because you got to kind of blink back in before you can throw a punch a lot of times. So, I mean, he's a devastating fighter for a fighter to try to counter or to try to chase and maul, just because you're running into a terrific puncher. You're chasing a puncher. That's just, I can't stress how difficult that would be for the average fighter to chase somebody who punches that hard.
And Keith is sure quick. as long as Keith gets set quick, you know, and he's able to punch. But he could even punch when he's moving his feet. You notice, like, some of them right uppercuts as he was using short steps circling Guerrero. That's just, you know, stuff that he's worked on. And, you know, he tries to stay on balance at all times, because you never know when there's a counter that you can capitalize on.
Well, Dan, that was a bump. That was a head bump that he got hit with. Keith got hit with for that hematoma. And,
and
when you're fighting left-handers,
was,
it's enough to drive you crazy when you fight left-handers. They butt, they step on your feet, each other, you step on each other's feet. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know,
it's
hard. They're just hard to fight.
Yeah, they were three or four head butts in the fight. I mean, they were real quick and kind of subtle on the inside. Plus, he took some punches there from Guerrero. So it wasn't just that one head butt. It was an accumulation of things throughout the fight.
Yeah, there was more than one. But that one was very noticeable. I saw it. It was about about the fourth round, third or fourth round. And Keith moved in, and he moved down it. It's inevitable. Left-handers, they drive you crazy when you fight them.
Well, when you're a southpaw setting down on that power hand, the same thing with right hand. There's a clash in the middle. So I think that's what happened. They're both trying to get their power shots home at the same instant.
Yeah.
Well, left hand is difficult. Because they're essentially not a mirror. And what gives the left hander trouble is the same thing that it gives the right hander trouble, you know, on the other side. So this is how you deal with it.
Yeah, that's why I kept telling Keith, keep your hands high, keep your tuck tight, you know, when you're inside, because you don't know when that head's coming towards you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Dan, when the...
Well, it was a great fight, Dan, with a great game plan, and I'm glad to see Keith landing him right hands of the body. That guy was ideally set up. He's a nice fellow, like you say, but he got caught with some awful right-hand shots to the body, too. And they didn't tickle either. I love body punches. It's my favorite thing. I love it. I love that fight.
You're old school. And then, you know, the body's really
man. I grew up with Tony Zale, watching Tony Zale, and he was a devastating body puncher. And,
yes.
You know, he knocked my man Graziano out with a couple of body shots. I'll never forget that. That was my boyhood hero, and then Zale wiped him out with a right hand under the heart and a left hook. Jesus. Sounded like a freight train hitting.
Little tiny horse.
You knew Tony Zale. You remember him.
I do. I mean, I'm 64, so it's, you know, he's a little bit before my time, but...
You probably fight films of him, though.
Oh, no doubt. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a tough guy. Real tough. They fought, what, 5 times?
I believe so,
they fought a lot. Well, he fought Sir Dan when he was way over the hill. He was in the Navy. The war broke his career up, and he wasn't the same guy when he got out. But, you know, and Sir Dan was lucky. He caught him when he was over the hill. And
I haven't seen much of Sir Dan, but my trainer used to talk about him. He was really one heck of a fighter.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how he fought. He fought with his left hand high up on his shoulder with an open palm. And he protected his left shoulder protected his chin. He tucked his chin in behind his left shoulder. And that's how he fought. Very noticeably had his left hand high with his palm open, used to catch jabs. He was more of a right-hand puncher than he was with a left hook. It was all right hand. So he fights LaMotta. LaMotta, you might as well hit a piece of concrete in the head, you know. he hit LaMotta 4 or 5 shots that didn't even faze him. And LaMotta mauled him. About the 6th or 7th round, he said his shoulder was dislocated. But he got a good shellacking and a working over inside from LaMotta. And that's the only time I ever saw Sir Dan lose. That's the only fight. I saw him 5 or 6 times live. And that's the only fight I ever saw him lose.
And then he was killed on a plane crash on the way for the rematch with LaMotta. Am I correct?
From France.
Yeah, he died in that plane crash. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
LaMotta beat him easily. LaMotta, his style... His style was made for LaMotta. LaMotta just got inside and just tore him apart, threw him around the ring, wrestled him, bullied him, mauled him, you know, just beat the hell out of him. But he was a nice fighter. I saw him prior to that. He actually, the first time I saw him, the guy died from head blows, but that was from a previous fight. And the first guy he fought when he came to this country died. He didn't fight for a while, and then, you know, he then became the number one contender, and then he won. But Sugar Ray stayed in the welterweights. I thought someday I'd see him and Sugar Ray fight, but they never did. Sugar Ray stayed in the welterweights because you had LaMotta, Graziano, you had a lot of good middleweights up there. Sugar Ray was enjoying his reign as the welterweight, so he didn't move up till later on when he couldn't make 147 anymore. But, the old-timers talked about him. He was great defensive fighter. For a guy his height, nobody hit him with right hand. There's some old films of him, Dan. You can get them. Nat Flesher had them way back. I bought them. I have copies of them.
Hey, Dan,
anyway, they don't run Greatest Fights of the Century anymore. I think it would be very popular.
Yeah, I like to watch the old fighters. You know, you can pick up moves like the new, you know, some of the modern day fighters, they don't move like some of the older guys do.
The old guys bent over. I was telling the guys on the show, the older guys bent over at the waist more. They moved in low. They bobbed and weaved. They fought entirely different fights. Nobody does that today. And I was telling them, I said, the Olympics changed not too long ago. They didn't want you bending over at the waist. They frowned on it. And all the amateur trainers in the country started making them, you know, be stand-up boxers. Right after Joe Frazier, they changed the Olympic rules and the scoring rules. That's what they all happened.
Do you think that Keith will be fighting again this year?
We're set to fight three times this year. We're going to fight this summer and then probably at the end of the year. I hate to look past that fight, but, no, he said he wanted to fight three times, and that's what we're going to do, and that'll keep him sharp.
So you think it'll be Maidana would be your next one?
Well, we're hoping. I mean, that's who I want. That's who we all want. But, you know, I think Al Heyman can be better.
Keith and Maidana.
Oh, I'm betting my house on that one. I'll make money on that. If you fight Maidana, I'm remortgage my house.
You're gonna buy a house.
Oh, Madonna would be too slow. He wouldn't be able to move away from him. He wouldn't be able to move away from Keith if Keith went after him. That'd be a hell of a fight, though, for a while. But Keith would win that one.
I think the difference in that fight, I think, is Keith a little bit quicker, but he's much more accurate than Madonna. Madonna kind of wings a lot, whereas Keith has a...
Madonna's right hand is awful. He throws a sloppy right hand. It's more of a chop than it is a straight punch. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Other tough
left. Madonna's better when his opponent is stationary. If Madonna's opponent's moving around a lot, he'll run into it.
Yes. Yes.
Any other questions, guys?
Well, Keith, I think the public in the future won't be long. The public will be demanding Keith and Mayweather. That'll be the fight of the future.
Well, they're
starting
to talk.
That might be your third fight this year.
They're starting to talk about it, which is good.
Right.
That's what's going to happen. Yeah. Well, what the hell is Mayweather's tax bracket going to be?
Oh, probably 70%.
Oh, it'd be the highest.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's going to be an awful paycheck to the IRS.
Hey, Dan, real quick, while we have you on the phone, tell us what you think about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight and how you see that playing out.
I see as long as Floyd keeps his punch count up, because he's going to have to work against Pac. I think Pac is his biggest asset is he stays in a rhythm and he's constantly in and out and he's constantly punching and he fights long. So I think Floyd's going to have to get his hands moving this fight and not wait and wait like he does sometimes four or five rounds and then start to work. I think he's going to have to work from the opening bell, but I like Floyd in this fight. I like Floyd by decision in this fight.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure, as always, to have you on. We're up against our time limit here. I know your time is precious, and we don't want to take you away from your gym and your relaxation. But I appreciate you coming on with us and again, being so informative. None of our guys, we've all looked at the fight. We always look up to you as the trainer, and we appreciate the time that you give us.
It's an honor to talk to you guys. Anytime you want me on, just let me know.
We appreciate that.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Take care, Dan.
Buddy, okay. You guys take care.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Well, guys, another great show. Dan was, man, that was, that's like having Christmas in July for me. I get a chance to stop in at the gym and see these guys, and they're just it's an amazing group of people he's got in his gym up there in South St. Pete. Well, Chris, you want to lead us out tonight?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm on a roll. I predicted two fights in a row now. I'm on a roll.
Oh, yeah. Who do you got
I'm
tonight?
I'm
going to
ruin my reputation. My reputation
up
is here.
Who do you got tonight, Carl or Pascal?
When I make a prediction, the other guys bet the other way. Now I got two in a row, Broner and Keith. So
right,
I figure,
well,
Pacquiao. Yeah, I figure he can't beat Mayweather. Can't beat Mayweather. Mayweather. I predict Mayweather by decision. I really do. I don't see how it can go any other way. Pacquiao's past his prime. Mm-hmm. Mayweather is not as past his prime as much as Pacquiao is. That's why I think. And I think Mayweather is very smart. He's going to make a study of how to beat Pacquiao, and I think he's just going to do it. He won't fight his usual style. I think he'll, like you say, Dan said, he's got to keep his hands moving. You're going to have two busy fighters. I don't think either one has the potential to knock the other one out. So I'm going with Mayweather on the decision. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. Who's fighting tonight, guys?
Sergey Kovalev against Jean Pascal. Your big Russian friend that beat Bernard Hopkins.
Oh, boy, my man Kovalev. I'm going to predict Kovalev tonight. The guy's too damn tough. The other guy, when Hopkins beat him, I lost it for the Canadian. I didn't think too much of him. Bernard fooled him, outsmarted him, outboxed him. Didn't throw that many punches. Threw the ones he did throw through wisely. I don't give Pascal a chance against Kovalev. Not at all. I figure him by a knockout. Kovalev by a knockout. Let's see if I can do three in a row.
I'll go with Kovalev. I don't necessarily think he'll knock Pascal out. I just think he's going to end up dominating the fight. I think he'll have trouble early with Pascal's movement and speed. But Kovalev, he seems to get the timing down when it's necessary, and he's going to do that.
Yeah, the other guy's not a good enough boxer to outbox Kovalev. I'm going to predict a knockout tonight. We'll see next week what happens. All right, guys, it was a good week. It was a good show. I really was happy to see Keith fight the way he did. He won a lot of fans across the nation with that fight.
Yeah.
And they're going to be screaming for a Mayweather fight after the Pacquiao fight's over. You wait and see. That's going to be the next big thing. And I hope that in the interim time, I hope Keith doesn't. Well, nobody's going to beat Keith. Nobody's going to beat Keith in that division. Nobody's going to beat him. He knows how to win now.
Yep.
That damn right hand he threw to the body or knocked an elephant over.
That's for
sure. A couple of them. And I just moved Guerrero up to his head, and Texas are about even. Because he took some on God. I mean, I saw the next Texas cop. He got the hell beat out on the hung in there. I really got to give him an A for effort, man. And he's got the heart of a lion, you know? All right, guys. See you next week.
All right, guys,
take it easy.
Take care.
All right.
Take care.
Goodbye, Chris. Guys.
All right, Ty, who do you have for tonight?
You know what? I got Stevie in a very close fight, and I have Kovalev, who I think is going to, you know, survive some, you know, Pascal's going to have his moments, but Kovalev is going to be the more consistent and the fresher fighter down the stretch, and he's going to win a pretty convincing decision. I think the only thing that stops him from taking out Pascal is Pascal's iron chin and the use of Pascal's legs to get away to limit the trauma. But outside of that, I think Sergey is going to win going away.
Mm-hmm. Z, you forgot to give us a second fight.
About Stevie. I think Stevie's going to end up, he might have, you know, some moments just gauging, you know, how to fight in the draft golf in the early rounds. But I think after getting warmed up, Steve's going to gain control and dominate the fight. Clear decision.
Good. All right. Ty, you want to lead us out? Or second half?
Yeah, you know, it's been great having Dan Birmingham on. We thank him for coming on, and congratulations to he
hold
and his
on,
charges.
Hold on just a second, guys.
it would be good if Stevie could, this fight that Stevie has with Zar Glaskov is an eliminator, Zito. So it'd be good if he could get a win. It'd put him in position for a shot at a title. Obviously, whether he would get that shot anytime soon is something different, but still.
Yeah, well, I mean, Stevie, he's not young in his career, so it would have to be relatively soon. But Stevie, he's deserving. He's deserving. He's moved up to heavyweight, had some rocky moments, but he's actually proven that he's a top heavyweight quality contender.
Yeah, you know, and I really like him over Zar Glaskov. I think when Stevie loses a heavyweight, it's usually because somebody's imposing their size on them. And I don't know if Zar Glaskov can do that to Stevie. I don't know, number one, if he has the size. And that's not necessarily the kind of fighter he is, actually. He's going to engage Stevie in a fencing contest, albeit a high pace when he's going to try to push the pace. But I think Stevie's going to be a little too slick for him and hit just hard enough to keep him honest.
I thought we had our caller, but it was somebody else. But all right, well, it was a great getting an update that Edner's getting the spot that he's so richly deserves.
That Edner signed with Al Haymon, all he has to do is step in the ring and do what he's supposed to do, and he'll be taken care of.
Yeah, he will. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you both for being on with us. I want to thank Chris for being on, and, of course, Dan always does a fantastic job. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of the Police and Fire Services. If you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, you just say hello, a handshake, a nod, just let them know that you know they exist. It means the world of good to everybody. These programs are also brought to you with deepest appreciation to the men and women who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerber, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Patrolman Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Police Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Charlie Condit, Officer Charlie Condit, and our latest entry, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. May the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night.
Shema Ezahir Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet HaKuig Again Ma Yerma a fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the
night, Bob. We love you.